I feel good.
Dad, are you singing to your cereal?
Come on, Ava. Silk almond milk starts the morning on a high note.
Silk almond milk.
With calcium, vitamins A, D, and E.
Feel plenty good.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we're coming up on the end of the first half of the NBA season, and we thought it would be great to talk to our good friend from ESPN, and that is Jeff Van Gundy, and he joins us now. Jeff, Michael, Don, and Peter, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. Are you as surprised that the Harden trade to the Nets has worked out as perfectly as it has? I mean, I always knew he was a great player, but watching him every single game now, Jeff, and you live in Houston, so you used to watch him almost every game anyway, he's better than I thought he was. Did you think it was going to work out this well?
Well, I didn't know what their level of commitment was defensively. I think that's improved. But I had no doubts when Harden went there that he would be the primary ball handler and that he would play great. I didn't know if Irving would, you know, at that point, Irving was in, he was on hiatus for a little bit. So I didn't know where he was at, nor did I know how willingly he would accept Harden's greatness. But if they can just, like, keep playing, keep putting the ball in Harden's hand and playing with, you know, great chemistry and flow at that end, they're going to be, you know, unguardable defense, you know, offensively. And then defense, they've shown improvement. They're not going to have to be great, but they're going to have periods of greatness where they can lock in and shut down. And I've seen improvement defensively. So, you know, they've got a great shot here, and, you know, the trade is going to go down as one that one of the very best trades the Nets have ever made, and hopefully it'll go down as good as the Kidd trade went down.
And I'm trying to remember the teams you had ahead of the Nets when the deal was made when you came on. It might have been the Bucks, Sixers. You didn't have them as the best team in the Eastern Conference. How would you assess it now after seeing them play?
Again, so much is health, right? So Durant, if Durant's not there, then, you know, I would, you know, I think Philadelphia and Milwaukee are their equals easily. You know, if Durant's back and all three of them are back and they're able to fortify their inside depth with a person of quality, then they're going to be the best team in the East talent-wise. Now, that, you know, that level of talent is hard to accumulate. You don't get that many chances where you're healthy and you're talented and you're in your prime. So if they get that opportunity and everybody's healthy, they got a great shot.
Can Durant coming back, Jeff, can that, I mean, as crazy as this sounds because he's so great, can that set them back a little bit? Because they really have not, the three of them have not played that many minutes together. So is that going to be an issue when he does come back?
No, I don't think it's going to be an issue if the goal is to win. But you don't get to set your own terms as far as, you know, what it's going to take to win. So in their case, all three guys have had the ball in their hands their whole career, except Irving when he was in Cleveland with James, right? But the rest have been the featured guy on their team ever since Harden went to Houston. So for 8 years, Harden was the lead guy in Houston. Durant, even though he played with Curry, you know, he was still the best player out in Golden State. It's going to go right to their level of sacrifice. You know, if they want to get, they understand that this is all about sacrifice and they're not worried about individual numbers and they just want to win. You know, offensively, they're going to be unguardable and they're going to be happy. And if you're unguardable and happy, that should translate to adequate defense at the other end.
Tillman Fertitta has definitely taken the high road with Harden. He says he'll retire his number down the road. Gave him the tribute video coming back. Does that surprise you?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I think today everybody is – they don't want to be looked at as spiteful. So no matter how a guy treats you, when he returns, you, like, throw out the carpet, red carpet, and, you know, say, you know, like, you know, you give him a video, retire his jersey. I just think it's interesting, you know. You know, if my wife walked out on me for Jerry Orbach 10 years ago and she then brought the kids back to, you know, for the every other weekend visit, I'm not giving her a video when she brings the kids back.
Jeff, you know what I mean? If you were in front of me right now, I'd hug you because I said if you have a 20-year marriage and all of a sudden your wife – slept with everybody in the cul-de-sac, would you give her a Valentine's Day card? I thought it was such a ridiculous thing to do a tribute video yesterday.
No, I don't, though, because it's good business. Because
there you go.
It's good business because right now, let's face it, the media is looking for all these things, and they're going to blow up a story if you don't do a video. That's why these teams give videos to everybody. If you've ever walked through the concourse of an arena, you know, you're given a video. Like, doesn't even matter your level of contribution. The one I thought they missed on last night was they didn't acknowledge Mike D'Antoni at all. And I thought that was
like
an oversight. But the point is, no one cares about coaches when it comes to business. They care about the players and how they're perceived by other players. So you know, at the heart of, like, most of these owners, they're competitive. If a player leaves, their natural inclination is not to give them a video and to welcome them back and to shower them with affection. But from a business standpoint, there's a level of sensitivity now with players, with media, with fans, that if you don't, they'll make you out to be heartless. And while I don't think that's right, it is the way it is. And so you have to adapt and adjust. And so I think your thinking, Michael, is right. You know, like you shouldn't feel obligated, but business-wise, you absolutely are obligated. And it's not just James Harden. It's anybody. You know, if you remember a couple of years back, Isaiah Thomas, he was complaining about, like, they didn't do a video for him in Boston, or it wasn't long enough, or he wasn't there when it happened, you know, whatever. But it becomes a bigger thing. So I think it's easier just to give him the video and move on.
See, I understand what you're saying and what Don said to me earlier as well. But my only point is it's so raw. And what he did essentially destroyed this organization for the next 3 years. He did not do it the right way. He came in out of shape. He spit in the face of COVID protocols, and, oh, all is forgiven. 2 months later, all is forgiven?
Well, the only thing I will say to that is, if I was a player and I do everything right, they're not going to trade me. You're almost forced now to be the jerk if you want out. And so it becomes a test of wills. At the start of the year, they said it didn't matter how uncomfortable, the Rockets people, it didn't matter how uncomfortable it became. They were going to do what was best for them. But then when he went into that press conference and said, we're not good enough, it pushed the deal across the finish line because it did become too uncomfortable for him. And so if you do everything right as a player, they're not trading you. You might make the request, but they're not trading you. It's almost imperative, if you want something done, that you act like a jerk.
Isn't it amazing, Jeff, all the conversation, nobody wants to play for Dolan, no one wants to play at Madison Square Garden, the pressure, the losing. They were one game above 500 the other day. All of a sudden, there were reports that there are players that want to play for the Knicks. Isn't it amazing? All it takes is one game above 500 to change everything.
Well, that's why I pay very little attention to the chatter. I never believed no one wanted to play for the Knicks, and I don't believe, like, people are swarming to play there now because, like you said, They're one game above. What I can say, though, is it does take a the Brooklyn situation and the Knicks situation are two different things. To me, they're two different markets, right? If to play for the Knicks, if you're a great player, it takes a special player. You're going to take a lot of criticism. You're going to take some heat when you don't get the results. It's just how it is. It's like playing quarterback for the Jets or Giants or, you know, the best players on the Yankees. It's just different. And so they have to find the right best player to drive this rebuild. The guys on the team this year have done a remarkable job. They play hard. They share the ball. They have good depth. They don't have the guy, but they've built a good foundation. And now they've just got to get that right best guy to build around. It's harder than, you know, you would think, but there are guys out here who they're in the NBA whose mentality would shine in New York.
Do you think, Jeff, that Brad Stevens can figure things out in Boston and get them on the right track, or is this potentially the beginning of something worse for the Celtics?
You know, I get a lot when I do these interviews, everybody acts surprised at the Celtics being one game above 500. And I'm not at all. Like, if you look at the Kyrie Celtics just a couple years ago, right? They were so much more talented. They've lost, obviously, Kyrie, now Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier. I mean, their talent has been, like, really, because of financial reasons, you know, it's been taken away. It's not as a deep of team. And then you add in Jason Tatum to COVID, Jason Brown with a knee issue, Marcus Smart's been out 4 or 5 weeks. Jeff Teague has underperformed, as has Tristan Thompson. I mean, they're not a deep team. So I'm not surprised. There's a lot of teams like in and around 500. And there's, if you're in the Western Conference, your record probably doesn't look as good as it might if you were in the East. And if you're in the Eastern Conference, you're probably a little bit better record-wise than you would be if you were in the Western Conference. I consider all those teams sort of the same. The only way for the Celtics to be better is to get healthier and hopefully use that $28 million trade exception to bring in more talent, because their talent has been, you know, chipped away at over the last couple of years.
Now, we had on Bobby Marks yesterday. I asked him this question, and he didn't think he was, and I don't think he is either. So let me throw it to you. Every team that wants to compete for a championship needs at least two great players, two stars. If the Knicks get that great player, Jeff, is Julius Randle that other star, or is he Chris Bosh?
Oh, no. First of all, you can't compare Julius Randle to Chris Bosh.
Right.
Not yet.
He's not even that.
No. Chris Bosh was a number. Was that in Toronto for a playoff team? He was the number one guy. He was an absolute stud.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sacrificed, but was still an outstanding player on championship teams in Miami. And he could do it, you know, long range. He was a pretty good defender. He could score in the post. So that's skipping a few steps. But I would say, previous years, I would never have said Randle could be as good as he's been this year. I mean, he's had a fantastic year. Like, he's carried that team offensively on his back. And so while I don't think he's at Chris Bosh's level yet, he certainly has played himself into consideration for, hey, if we do get a number one, is he our number three?
Right.
Can he play well in that role? Will he accept that role? But he's had an outstanding year. Like, he shared the ball, he's passed it, he's scored it, he's tried harder on defense. He's been impressive.
Is this all Tibbs? I know you've always been a big fan of the coach. But, I mean, the talent's not that much different, and they didn't win their 18th game last year until, you know, 25 games from here. So why is he so good? What makes him so great?
Well, I think when you're evaluating a team season, you have to give a lot of the majority of the credit to the players. They're the ones out there doing it, right? And so we just talked about Randall. I think they have good depth. I think Alec Burks has been really good for them off the bench. You know, Quickly was a terrific draft choice. And Noel was a terrific signing for the minimum. So at the center position there with Robinson and Noel, they're not skilled, but they do one thing great, and they protect that rim very, very well and guard middle pick and rolls terrifically. So you want to give that credit to those players, but you can't overlook the shift in mentality that the Knicks have and not go directly to Thibodeau. He is ultra prepared. He is smart. People have talked about communication and with players. I thought that was nonsense before. You know, like, he's great with players. Serious players love playing for him because he helps them win and he makes them money, right? Because they play well for him. So, like, you can't overlook the impact of his intelligence, his intensity and passion. And what you see out there on a nightly basis is a team that plays its butts off and they pass the ball and they're unselfish. That's the basis of the turnaround. And I give Tom and his staff a lot of credit, and the players have done a terrific job.
Is he ever happy, though? Even he says he's never happy. You know him personally. Is he ever happy? Does he ever laugh?
Yeah, he does. But I would say in season, he's always on to the next game and the next play. And I'll tell you one thing, like I would like that, but like, we could be up 30 in either New York or Houston and having a bad last minute of the blowout. And this dude was all over me. Don't tolerate this. And I'm like, dude, just let me, can I smile for one minute, and then I'll get on that last five guys who were, you know, screwed up the last minute. But like, he is so driven towards sound play. And that's why I think, you know, maybe all games are like this, but basketball in particular, it's a game of habits. And your habits come down to doing the things you don't want to do in order to achieve what you want to achieve, right? Like getting in a defensive stance, seeing man and ball, rotating at the proper time, guarding the pick and roll. Those things don't happen by accident. They happen by repetition, and repetition drives habits. And what I see, even in this shortened training camp and this compacted season, is the Knicks have a lot better defensive habits than a lot of more experienced teams. And again, I give the credit to the players for buying in, but you can't overlook, you know, Tom's contribution. Mm-hmm. And you can't overlook Leon Rose's ability to get depth, right? So, you know, they drafted Quickly, helped their second unit. They traded for Rose, helped their second unit. They signed Alec Burke, helped their second unit. So their second unit, and then Nerlens Noel, right? Their second unit was put together by Leon Rose, and that depth has really helped them in a lot of these close games.
So how long do you go with this unit before you start thinking about adding?
I'm thinking about adding every single day, because this is a surprising team. It's a great story, but if you're driven towards championship or, you know, deep playoff runs, right? You know, this team isn't a deep playoff team. So you want to be opportunistic. That doesn't mean you have to make a trade or have to make a signing this summer, but you have to be in the talent upgrade business, because there's a difference between being a good story and a good team. And they may have some pieces they want to keep. They may not. I don't know how they view all their players. But I think everyone universally could agree, for them to be a conference finalist, they have a long way to go roster-wise.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now they play Pistons tonight. Derrick Rose is out again, by the way, health and safety protocol. So before I let you go, I've got to ask you this, Jeff. So we're talking earlier, and you made the comparison if your wife left you for Jerry Orbach. Now, you could have said Clooney, Pitt. You could have said Denzel. You went with Jerry Orbach. I'm just curious, why, and a fine-looking gentleman in his day, why Jerry Orbach?
My wife loved Jerry Orbach.
Really?
Law and Order, yeah. Loved him. So... That just popped into my head, you know, like,
okay.
you know, so, yeah. So, but it's really true. Like, I'm telling you, like, I just, my mentality, and I know it's not the same anymore, but, you know, it's just how it is. It's like, you know, no divorce is truly amicable, except in sports, where you throw bouquets at the person who left you.
Yeah, and other things, you throw other things at them. Anyway.
Wait, one last thing for you, Jeff. Yesterday, we were having some fun. Dear friend of the show, Ballard, had the suggestion that it would be fun in the NBA three-point contest if a legend was allowed to participate. Now, we argued about it, whether it's a good idea, bad idea. Michael believes that NBA legends would basically make a fool of themselves and not be able to get up the 25 threes. What say Jeff Van Gundy?
Well, it depends on what. First of all, I love the idea.
Tremendous, right?
Great idea. You'd have to give them, you know, lead time so they could practice, you know, and get in shape. But if you told me, I don't know about a 60-year-old or, but like, if you kept it, like for instance, if you put Tracy McGrady into a, even though he wasn't like this, or I'll give you one. And he's not even a legend, but he's a former player. He's the best shooter I ever coached, spot up shooter. It was John Berry. If you put John Berry into the shooting contest and gave him 3 months to get ready, I wouldn't be surprised if he won it.
But there's no way Larry Bird could compete in it at his age.
At some point, I mean, because like you're talking about what? Doing three rounds, or I don't know what the champion. Yeah. It's a lot of shooting, and also to concentrate and, you know, yeah. I mean, but I'm also going to say this. Those guys are all wired differently. If you give him lead time and Bird wasn't a high jumper on his shot. So, you know, he could shoot with the same rhythm, you know, that little like set. It'd be interesting if you racked up the balls today and it was untimed. It was untimed. And I think that's what you should do for the legends. You know, move around a little slower if you want. If it was untimed, I'd be interested to see what their scores would be. I got a better idea now. Let's bring the legends back and compete against each other. And whoever wins that goes in.
Yes, gets to be in it. Phenomenal.
Wow. So you like it? Okay, good.
Well, yeah, because we got destroyed by Michael yesterday when it was even suggested.
Bring him back all the old dunk champions and move the rim down to like 8 feet, you know.
Yeah, like Spud Webb, Dr. J, Clyde Drexler, do the whole thing, sure.
Yeah, but you like that one would bring out some injuries. That wouldn't be pretty. I like the – who came up with that?
The guy who listens to the show, Ballard.
That's my friend Ballard.
I like it. That's
well, you've got the voice. You could do it. You can get it done.
I might first. Yeah, I haven't watched an All-Star game in 20 years. So I was saying the other day, the last All-Star game I watched was the one I coached when I was All-Star game coach in Golden State. That was the last one I've watched. So
Why do you think they're silly, or are you just not into it?
Yeah, you know, they like. I think it's. You know, I think as the years have gone by, they've. I heard last year they said they competed a little bit harder, but
they did.
For a long period of time, like it just seemed like, you know, 1 year they shot like 163s combined. I mean, to me, that's not really enjoyable basketball to watch. What is enjoyable is when great players get together, when there's something on the line, and they go at it hard. That's what's fun for the fans. I think our players sometimes mistake, you know, when they get out of the way and watch people dunk. That's not fun. It would be like the difference between great pitcher, great hitter in the All-Star game, and they go at each other, versus a guy telling them what pitch is coming and throwing a 75-mile-an-hour meat pitch right down the middle. That's not fun to watch. You want to see great players compete hard. And I think in baseball, you probably see that more. In basketball, for whatever reason, it's, you know, I haven't sensed that that's the goal, is to get great players on the court competing hard.
Is it fair to say that Thibodeau probably wouldn't enjoy coaching an All-Star game?
He has coached one. Listen, he probably smiled his way through it and then was like bemoaning their lack of defensive intensity and communication guarding the pick and roll. So I would have loved to be in the coach's locker room right after the game. Yeah.
Good stuff, Jeff. Enjoy the weekend, the All-Star weekend. I know you'll be resting, so we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Jeff.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Bye. All right, so Ballard is now big time. I mean, I knew I was coming around on Ballard at the right time.
I mean, listen, I love that at the end, Jeff goes, who came up with that again? That's a good idea.
Hey, that was a really, really difficult interview for Michael.
He got a lot wrong.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But it's all right. You'll get better.
Listen, he said I was right, but he understands why the people do it. But he said, you know, we throw hosannas at people when you shouldn't. No, I don't feel – I don't. The Ballard stuff, we still have to get a veteran guy up to see if he – because what he said was he wouldn't time them. So you can have older guys meandering around the racks, throwing up shots. I still don't think they could do it. I think Reggie Miller could do it. I think Chris Mullin could do it. I think it's got to be a certain age. But once you get to be 65 or 70, I don't think you could do it.
But then imagine how cool it would be. Like, let's say traditionally they're all in their 50s. But then there's one guy who's like, no, I can do this. And they're 66 and they come out and crush it. Imagine the crowd. People would lose it.
Yeah, they would lose it. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Let's talk about everything you heard Jeff say. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.